messaging that feels more meaningful and more relatable to people. Sometimes maybe it feels less artful to advertising professional, but it's more meaningful to people. Well, that sticks and people come back to the brand. And I think that's where you and the great team at VoxBotMe, that's where you come in to provide the marketing, market research, advertising professionals with really the voice of the consumer. And I would not even call them consumer. I would call them people first, as people don't wake up in the morning thinking, I'm in the market for a new brand of blades to shave. You know, nobody thinks that way.
Site Show with Jen Mancusi, a top-rated live stream and podcast in the market research and insights industry. We stream live on LinkedIn, Twitter, and YouTube, and you can listen to us on all major podcast channels and watch on dbtv.tv. Join Jen and her guests for a weekly discussion around topics that will help you understand your customers better. Real Talk is presented to you by VoxPopMe, the leader in video research for over a decade. Here's today's conversation.
Hello, insights professionals, marketers, and everyone who wants to understand their customers better. I'm Jen Mancusi, and today I want to talk about the impact transformative brands have and how companies can create them. To discuss that topic, I'm excited to welcome back to Real Talk Emmanuel Probst, Senior Vice President of Brand Health Tracking at Ipsos and author of Assemblage, The Art and Science of Brand Transformation. Welcome back to the show, Emmanuel.
Jen and the team at VoxPopMe, thank you so much for having me back on the show.
We're so excited to have you back. I was just mentioning before, Emmanuel is our first repeat guest on the show. So thrilled to have you back here talking about your new book. So let's start off. Tell us, what is a transformative brand?
Yeah, the starting point for the book, Jen and everyone, is brands can no longer just sell products and brands can no longer just deliver on functional benefits. To succeed, brands must transform people and the world they live in. Brands must make a positive impact on us as individuals and on our local community and on the world at large. And it feels that, to me, that's particularly important to build brands that will generate a significant stream of revenue and people will become loyal to. And again, we'll do more than just selling and make profit, which is fine, but also we'll make this positive contribution that we all need. And that's what this book is about, is what are transformative brands and how to create one.
Where do you think the shift has sort of come from, of that, you know, demand for a brand to be no longer just create a product we want to buy, but actually have a broader impact? Where do you think that is coming from?
Yeah. So obviously this aligns with brand purpose as well, right? And I think 5-7 years ago, brand purpose became a buzzword and we saw a lot of brands jumping on board with a purpose, but it would be more of a bumper sticker, if you will. What has changed, in my opinion, or in my assessment over the last few months, last few years through the pandemic, is brands need to not just claim, but also demonstrate their purpose. That's part number one. Part number two is we're just overwhelmed with products and we're overwhelmed with brands in most categories. You have more and more alternatives. And frankly, this has literally accelerated during the pandemic. You have more ways to shop, more platforms and more retailers to shop from, and more products to choose from. You also have more technology, more messaging apps, more phones, more of everything, literally. And so that need for, one, making an impact on society so that you can call it brand purpose, but two, most importantly, make a positive impact on people, that has really come through the pandemic in my assessment over the last 2-3 years, whereby you don't need just another can opener or tube of toothpaste. You need a brand that's going to transform you from who you are to who you want to become.
Hmm. And do you think that that is like the based on the products that they are creating that are doing that transformation, or is it bigger than that?
I think it can be both. Not all products can be transformative per se. However, most, if not all, brands can make this positive impact on people and the world around us. And for some brands, it's very obvious. If you think of National Geographic, well, National Geographic, its mission is to showcase the beauty of the world. So that one is straightforward. But you also see some brands in CPG that were not built around making that positive impact and have adopted a purpose and a MO, I would say, that demands this. And if you think of the Real Beauty Project from Dove, for example, that is in the business of selling soap, and there is nothing wrong with this, is part of a very large conglomerate that's Unilever, and that's totally fine, is competing with dozens of other SKUs, if not hundreds of other SKUs at the shelf to sell soap. Yet, what Dove does differently is promote this image of real beauty and give people the confidence to express their beauty regardless of the shape of their body and the tone of their skin and maybe some imperfections on their skin and their hair and so on and so forth. So I feel that's a good example of a brand that, again, is in the business of making money, where that's what we're here for, yet is going to help people transform from who they are into who they want to be, someone beautiful, someone self-confident and comfortable with this idea of beauty.
Yeah, I love that. I think it's super interesting that sometimes, you know, like you said, soap in and of itself maybe isn't transformative, but the messaging around it, maybe it's the marketing that's transformative. Maybe it's the, you know, a charity aspect or something else that is actually having a broader impact, but it doesn't necessarily have to be the product itself. I think that's a really interesting way to look at it. And at the risk of sounding too obvious, I guess I want to ask, like, why would a company want to create a transformative brand?
Yeah, because brands need to stand out, and you can stand out through distinctive brand assets. That's fine, whether those are colors or sounds or haptics or what have you. But most of the time, that's not enough. Brands also need to generate a sustainable stream and continuous stream of revenue. Here's my point. You can do performance advertising and drive people to your e-commerce DTC website and you sell soap overnight. However, for this to be profitable and sustainable is very complicated. It's very, very challenging. That's why many DTC brands are struggling, because it's one thing to drive people to your website once and fill one basket. It's much harder to make your return on ad spend work for you and to get people to come back and back again. If you want to go beyond just performance and make a quick buck, which is hardly ever profitable anyway, you need to give people a reason to affiliate with the brand, to come back to the brand, to also purchase companion products. And as such, you need a reason to believe for your brand into your reason to believe in your brand that's going to be more compelling than just price and color and haptics and whatever traditional emotional benefits you would offer with your product.
Yeah, I think that lifetime value piece is really critical of, you know, I think it's interesting what you say about the sort of performance paid advertising, you know, isn't really sustainable. Maybe it's a good way to get awareness and get people in to try for the first time. Certainly, you know, social media ads, super effective, right? Especially for D2C. But, you know, that lifetime value, that long-term customer that's going to tell all their friends and come back over and over again the standards are a lot higher than they were a number of years ago for what consumers are choosing.
Yes, also because most performance advertising focuses on the brand, and the hero is the consumer and what the brand can do for the consumer. The hero is not the brand. And what I mean by this is too many brands tend to be self-centered and think in silo about their category, about their market, about the brand itself. Again, make no mistake, most people don't care about most brands. I hate to put it this way, but very few brands command a following, a form of devotion. So of course, we always talk about Apple and Airbnb and Nike, and sure, there's nothing wrong with this, but those successes tend to be anecdotal and not very scalable. Most brands tend to be functional. And again, most people don't care about most brands. They make those decisions very, very fast. People care about doing something that is meaningful for them and something that is going to make them the hero, something that's going to transform them, or something that's going to benefit their community, and or something that's going to benefit the world around them. Good news for marketers is brands can be part of this process. Brands can make a positive impact. For years, we marketers had to sell cigarettes and alcohol. Well, we can still do this, but we also have the opportunity to make a positive impact on the world and on people we sell to. So I think that's the distinction. Back to your question, Jen, on why do brands need to transform and become transformative? That's because the consumer is the hero, and the consumer is looking for more than a distinctive color and a tube of toothpaste.
Yeah, I think that's such a powerful statement, that brands are self-centered and the consumer is the hero, right? And I think this has come up in conversation quite a bit lately about just understanding people more broadly than just the product that they're buying within our category or our competitive set. I just had a conversation with a client last week about thinking about the like consumers as people and beyond just the products that they're buying, and how that actually opens up so much white space in terms of, hey, we never actually thought people were using our product in to solve this problem or to transform in this way. And now we can lean into it because we've put the consumer or the person or the human at the center, as opposed to just thinking about, you know, should my product be red or blue, or where should I put it on the shelf to get more sales? You know, thinking beyond just that, you know, I don't want to keep saying self-centered because not all brands are thinking that way, but beyond just what you're doing in that moment.
Yeah, well, I'll build on this, Jen. I read an article last week pointing to ads that had received awards in Cannes versus their performance among consumers. And what you see is articles that have received awards, in fact, end up performing quite poorly most of the time, or if anything, they're not very distinctive. Conversely, ads that advertising professionals and marketers don't necessarily love or think are a little bit too easy, if you will, tend to perform very well, and people remember them well. We in the marketing and advertising community tend to remember and focus on things that candidly very few people care about. And conversely, messaging that feels more meaningful and more relatable to people, sometimes maybe it feels less artful to advertising professional, but it's more meaningful to people, well, that sticks and people come back to the brand. And I think that's where you and the great team at VoxPotMe, that's where you come in, to provide the marketing, market research, advertising professionals with really the voice of the consumer. And I would not even call them consumer, I would call them people first, as people don't wake up in the morning thinking, I'm in the market for a new brand of blades to shave. You know, nobody thinks that way. You wake up in the morning thinking, I want to look good and fresh today because I have an important meeting today, or I have a date tonight, or I have a dinner with my in-laws. As such, I need to complete this mission to transform into whoever I want to become, whoever I want to appear to be. And that's where the brand, whether it's Harris or Dollar Shave Club or what have you, needs to step in to help me.
Yeah, that's such an interesting, like, you've got to send me that article about the ads that one can and ones that perform better with consumers. So that's a great example of, you know, are we intentionally creating ads that are going to win those awards, or are we looking for impact, right, on the consumer? And that's those are very different objectives.
Very, very different, yeah.
Yeah. What do you think are some of the struggles that companies have in creating a transformative brand?
It's thinking in a vacuum and in a category. I'll give you an example in alcohol. Often, and not always, just to be fair to our listeners today, often brands think about their category in isolation, meaning you're in vodka. It's going to be Smirnoff versus Belvedere versus Grey Goose, or you're in bourbon, and that's going to be Creek versus Bullet Rye versus, you know, whatever brand. That's to say, this is not how consumers think. First, they don't think of competitive brands. They might think of alternatives. That means I might buy a vodka to mix with oranges, and that vodka could be Smirnoff, that's completely fine, or maybe Absolut. And then I might buy what comes across as a more distinguished vodka when I host a more formal gathering, and maybe I want to come across a certain way with my guests, and that vodka is going to be Grey Goose or Belvedere. But I can own 2 bottles of vodka, and I can even own 3 bottles of vodka. In fact, at my house, I have a bottle of vodka I cook with that is neither Belvedere nor even Smirnoff. It's a much lower tier brand. And when I want to flambé my shrimps or my scallops, it works very well. So let's keep in mind that people think in terms of alternatives, not necessarily competitive brands. And number two, again, you don't shop vodka in isolation most of the time. You think of the gathering. Am I going to gather with my buddies from college? Am I going to host a bachelorette party for my girlfriend? Am I going to host a formal holiday party for my neighbors? Am I going to host a dinner for my in-laws? And depending on this mission, you will not buy vodka in isolation. You are also maybe going to buy some champagne or going to buy some beer and some seltzer if you're having a backyard party, maybe some solo cups, maybe you're going to buy some nice china and glasses if it's a more formal dinner, and so on and so forth. And as such, as marketers, we need to think of those moments of truth, moments of conviviality. That's how Pernod Ricard calls them. Pernod Ricard is a large European brand that competes with Beam Suntory and Diageo. But we think of what we call moments of conviviality. That is the gathering. That is, once again, what are people trying to achieve? People are not trying to benchmark Belvedere versus Grey Goose. People are trying to create a gathering and come across a certain way. And that's how the brand needs to be positioned, as part of this gathering.
Yeah, that's such a key differentiator of, you know, those moments of truth. I think about like the occasions as you're describing things, like, you know, there's different problems that me as an individual are trying to solve when I'm making that decision. And the occasion, as you describe, is the key to that decision-making. And maybe it's not even alcohol at all. As you were talking, you're saying, like, you know, thinking about the category in isolation, like, what am I trying to achieve? Like, you're cooking. Maybe I'm deciding whether or not I'm, like, what recipe am I using? Am I flambéing my scallops, or am I doing something else, right? Which, yeah. So it's a totally different, you are in a totally different category, or I'm looking to relax, you know, if I'm looking to relax, maybe vodka is part of that, but maybe not. So maybe what else am I competing with? Like a spa day? I don't know. But understanding those occasions and the driver behind them is so key to figuring out what problem you're solving for people.
Precisely. Exactly. The spa day is another great example, Jen, of a transformation into who I want to become and how do I want to feel. It's not about simply about taking care of my skin and taking care of my body. It's about feeling a certain way.
Yeah, totally. So how do you know that a brand is transformative? Maybe some examples of, I mean, you've mentioned a few already, but what does it look like when a brand is truly transformative?
You know, we'll stay, I'm thinking about vodka since we've been talking about vodka. And of course, to be clear, maybe we should remind our listeners to be mindful about their alcohol consumption. We don't mean to encourage alcohol consumption on this podcast, but a recent ad for Belvedere, and that ad was with Daniel Craig, the actor, whom is mostly known as James Bond. And that brand is transformative, and this ad is transformative. By the way, that's another ad that advertising professionals have been quite critical of, yet I think is making a true impact on people. And here's why. In short, at the beginning of the ad, you see Daniel Craig, as known as James Bond, on a bridge in Paris, wearing a very formal tux. So you're really in that traditional James Bond universe, okay, of a white tux in Paris, something very classy, arguably a little bit stuffy, but very traditional. Throughout the ad, Daniel Craig, and of course, through the consumption of the product, Belvedere is going to transform into someone, I would say maybe queer and definitely more progressive and very comfortable with his sexuality and the way he expresses himself and the way he interacts with people around him. And that's a very steep departure, if you will, from that traditional, preppy, very classy British public school James Bond image at the beginning of the ad towards this very progressive, queer, open-minded individual that he is at the end. The brand is facilitating this transformation. So that really illustrates what I meant when we started this conversation, Jen, whereby the brand is here. The brand is not the hero. The brand is here to support you in this transformation from who you are to who you want to become. The brand is here to support your personal identity project. That is what the brand is about here.
That's super interesting. I'm going to have to look up the ad now so I can see exactly what you're talking about. But I understand what you mean about, you know, sort of they're illustrating here's maybe where you're starting and here's where we can help you get to, and making you feel a part of that and relate to it and give you that message of, you know, I think this is one of the things that Apple's always done so well. You mentioned them before. Like, it's not that it's selling the idea of what it means to be an Apple user.
Yes.
It's not selling a phone. They're not selling. I have no idea how many pixels are in my camera on my phone, right? But I'm sold on the being an Apple customer. I'm sold on being a Belvedere customer because I want what they've portrayed me that I'm going to get if I use their product.
And Jen, you spoke about Apple, and that's important. Three things come to mind. As you said, Apple is a brand. How does it make me feel? It makes me feel about being someone sophisticated, someone who likes great design and great products. Let's remind our listeners of three things about Apple. The first one is Apple did not invent most of those products. Apple did not invent the iPod, the MP3 player. Apple did not invent the mouse. Apple did not invent the personal computer. And we could go on and on like this. They were not first to market. The second part is Apple is not functionally superior. You spoke about your phone, Jen, and number of pixels. You have no clue how many, you said this yourself, how many pixels your camera may capture. And in any case, the answer is Google Pixel, or I believe Samsung, definitely Google Pixel, is a superior technology when it comes down to the resolution of your camera. And last but not least, all Apple users and even non-Apple users are aware of that. Apple is significantly more expensive. So wait a minute, you have a product that is not that innovative because it wasn't the first one to market, is not functionally superior. Oh, and by the way, is 30 to 50% more expensive than competition. Yet, you buy Apple because of this transformative aspect of how it makes you feel, of its contribution to your identity project, because carrying an iPhone is sexy and carrying a competitive brand is not.
Yeah, you articulated it way better than I could, but that's exactly it. I mean, why would you ever buy an inferior product for more money? Right. Like, but we do it. We do it all the time. Because of the community or the transformation that we're being sold of, like, who we are as, you know, an owner of this product versus that one. And it's such a powerful example and a rare example of, you know, it's not always people buying on price or buying on features. It's often not that at all. And that's really why this is so critical to be focused on that transformation that you're selling, not necessarily the product.
And I would add to this, Jen, that most of the time as consumers, you either don't have the skills, the knowledge, nor the tools, nor candidly the patience to assess those functional benefits anyway. So let's go in toothpaste. If a brand of toothpaste claims to make your teeth 3 shades whiter within 45 days, as an example, you have to take this claim for granted. Now, I'm not accusing brands to be dishonest, and I trust that there are some legal guardrails in place. My point is nobody is going to buy to do some A-B testing at home to test the toothpaste over 45 days and then test competitive brand, assuming, of course, that you have to consume the exact same quantity of coffee and red wine and whatever might impact the color of your teeth. And then after all this, you need to go to a dentist or someone who is going to charge you a few thousand dollars to assess the shade of white of your teeth. So nobody does this. And when you go to the pharmacy, you see dozens, if not hundreds, of SKUs in toothpaste. The brands that are going to differentiate, maybe it's going to be Tom's, because Tom's is a B Corp from Maine. And maybe it's going to be a new innovation from Colgate, because Colgate came up with a tube that can be 1% recycled, and so on and so forth. But the point I'm making is you're going to have to come up with a benefit that goes beyond make my teeth whiter if you want to stick out at the shelf.
Yeah, that's such a great point. This is a good segue too, because I wanted to ask, you know, what kind of positive impact can these transformative brands have? And so, you know, in those examples you just mentioned, maybe it's Tom's who's, you know, giving back in some way, or it's a bigger brand who's focused on sustainable packaging that's going to have a broader impact on the environment. What are some of the other positive impacts that these brands can have, maybe not just on the individual, but on community and society as a whole?
Yeah, I think there is a real opportunity for brand to make a positive impact on the economy as well, on economic recovery, and help people save money while making a profit. And a brand that comes to mind two brands at least come to mind that do all of the above. I'm thinking of Lululemon and I'm thinking of Levi's. And what those brands do is you can bring back to the store gently worn yoga pants or a pair of jeans that has been worn already and sell it back, if you will, to the store in exchange for a coupon. And everyone wins. You win as a consumer because you receive a coupon and you engage in a more sustainable behavior. The brand wins also because they are going to resell those items to people who could not have engaged with the brand otherwise. Meaning brand new yoga pants might be $150, gently worn yoga pants might be, I don't know, $60 or $70 or maybe less. And you bring to your store a consumer that would not have walked in otherwise. And then the environment, wins because making jeans or making clothing items in general is very hard to make this a sustainable practice. And last but not least, whoever is going to buy those pants, whoever is going to buy those jeans next, will have the satisfaction of giving this product a second life. So this product is going to feel unique to them. It's going to have much more of an identity than if the product was new. That's why used clothing secondhand is seeing such a renaissance now. And it gives you the satisfaction of doing the right thing for the planet and the environment. So at the end of the day, everyone wins. The original customer, the new customer, the brand, the environment, and the economy.
I love that example. And the one kind of criticism I would have for these brands is like, I had no idea that that was something that they did. And I'm a Lululemon customer. I go into the store all the time. I never knew that that was something that they did. If they did a better job promoting that, I think that would have a huge impact on their business. Maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm missing the message somewhere, but I love that approach. Everything you described is, you know, everybody's focused on, you know, sustainable fashion and kind of reusing and shopping in, you know, secondhand stores and things like that, or repurposing clothing items. So it hits that piece. It hits the economy pieces you mentioned. You know, I think that all of the great work that some of these brands are doing and are having an impact, a positive impact, maybe that's what they're missing, is actually letting everybody know about the great work that they're doing.
Maybe they should hire you and I, Jen. We should pitch them after the show today, see if we can sell some partnership and...
I love that. We totally should. Lululemon, if you're listening, we can help you get the word out. That's so great. Now, I mean, actually, this is another great segue. Like, what role does perception play, and how do we kind of understand what people's perceptions are? This is a great example. I mean, I'm a sample size of one, right? So we, mm-hmm. we don't over-index on me, guys, but like, you know, that perception of Lululemon, when you started to tell that story and you mentioned Lululemon as a brand having a positive impact on the economy, I'm going, where is this going? Because their products are premium, right? So, you know, that perception of, you know, what they're doing and what they're, maybe what they're actually doing, what we think we're doing, what sort of role does that play?
To me, it's most of the battle. Because again, most functional items cannot easily be distinguished. You will recognize the Lululemon logo. And granted, listen, I'm sure those yoga pants are of great quality, but you have other manufacturers out there. Nike is one, Adidas is one, Alo Yoga is one. We could go on and on. You have many other brands that produce quality items. So the perception we as marketers create for the brand is in most cases, most of the battle. And there's actually a chapter in the book called Perception is the Truth. And in that chapter, so as always, I start from consumer psychology with pop culture examples. And I look into how do we create, how do we understand what is true and what is not? And the chapter is called Perception is the Truth because really we construct our own truths based on our perception of the world. And we construct, we as people, as consumers, we construct our own truths based on the information we are exposed to. And in a way, we construct our own truths based on what we want the truth to be. And that's why fake news, for example, do so well, because fake news further confirms what people want to believe, and as such, disseminate, propagate even better than real news. So there is I'm not going to spoil it for our listeners, but there is a whole focus drilled down on why do fake news get so much traction. So back to marketing, it's about creating a perception for the product, orchestrating this perception. But that's where perception is the truth, because very few people, if anyone, will check the claim or assess the functional aspect of the product. And frankly, nobody cares.
That's so true. Yeah. And I guess how do brands measure that perception? What are some of the ways that you'd recommend, you know, kind of getting a good pulse on where you sit and if people are being influenced by the right or the wrong messages?
Yeah, well, that's where us market researchers come in. And we spoke about the great capabilities at VoxPopMe earlier to understand consumers' lives. And of course, and you'll forgive the plug here, but that's what Ipsos brings to the table, is to understand consumers' perceptions of products, what we call brand desire. How does the brand make me feel? And how does the brand compare with other alternatives? But also guide brands to act with empathy, meaning to create this genuine, authentic connection with people that we spoke about earlier. And it's also about understanding the context people live in. And remember when we spoke about occasions, moments of consumptions, that's what I mean by context. That's the micro context, meaning this mission you're trying to accomplish, but also the macro context of the world around you. And I'd say the last one is the opportunity for brands to help shape expectations. So what I mean by this is Levi's and Lululemon. Another one is IKEA. IKEA will soon enable you or started enabling you to bring back furniture to the store. Well, as by doing all this, those brands shape expectations towards their category of how consumers can do the right thing for the environment and how brands can do the right thing for the environment and the economy. So that's a long answer, but in short, it's about better listening to the voice of people and subsequently the voice of consumers and taking action and relying on your agency to guide this action to improve the performance of your brand.
That's great. That's such good, you know, kind of tangible steps to take, right? To be able to understand where you sit now and figure out exactly what you need to do to get where you want to be if you're on this journey of creating or building or evolving a transformative brand.
Well, so, if I may build on this, Jen, exactly, you said a tangible step. And that's also an important change that I see in our relationships with our client partners, whereby for the longest time, market research has been about measurement in hindsight. And today, the work we do with clients, and that, of course, the backbone of this book is to help people take action, meaning we can help you understand the world. That's what we're here for, and we will. Importantly, we want to guide the activations. We want to counsel on what you should do next. Same thing with the book. My point being, it doesn't matter, or it shouldn't matter, in my opinion, if you engage with a book for $28.95 or if you engage with an agency for $285,000. It's so what and now what? What am I going to do next as an outcome of these learnings? And I think that's what we should strive to do always.
I couldn't agree more. I think that oftentimes, whether it's from a customer experience perspective or a research perspective or just brands in general, like there's so much measurement happening, right? Or there's so much, even like you described, like reading the book or we don't have a measurement problem. We don't have a learning problem. We have an action problem, right? What are we going to do with it? I love the simplification of the so what, now what. It's a great way to imagine it. Like, what are we going to do with what we learn? And that's a great, maybe just a life lesson that we could take into all areas of our lives. I'm going to do this. And why am I doing it? And what am I going to do next? Is a great way to think about it.
Indeed.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today. I loved this conversation. Can you quickly just tell everybody how they can get the book?
Yeah. So the book is called Assembly and Science of Brand Transformation. And of course, it's available on Amazon. It's available also from retailers like Barnes and Nobles. People can also connect with me on LinkedIn. And my name is simply Emmanuel Probst. And to the best of my knowledge, I'm pretty much the only one on LinkedIn. So you will find me there. And I read my own email. emails. So if people want to reach out with any additional questions or comments after the show, I will make sure to reply to you in a unique and authentic fashion.
I can attest to that. That is true. That is true. Thank you again so much. Thanks, everybody, for listening in. We will be back. We've got back-to-back episodes this week. Another episode tomorrow. I will be chatting with Brett Townsend of Questor. See you then.